Good to have you with us on a Friday edition of The Agenda. And today, rescheduled from, I think, about a week ago, State Senator Brad Hawkins was set to be on the program. And we said, could you slide a week? Maybe we had a lot of school board candidates to visit with. So, Senator Hawkins, we appreciate your flexibility, and thanks for coming in today. I see you brought your legislative assistant.
Well, sort of. This is actually my son, Tyler, who just recently turned 12, and I just thought I'd kind of make this into a bring your son to work day, since it's supposed to be 106 degrees today, and it's not too often that he gets a chance to come here when I'm on the radio. So thanks so much for letting him be in studio. And I do want to pass along my sincere compliments to you, Dave. I listened to a good portion of The Agenda yesterday, honoring Don West and raising money for him and Terry. And that was just tremendous. That was just such a fabulous event. You being, out there near, you know, the vets, serving vets, helping out and the community, the way they've stepped up. I looked at the GoFundMe page just this morning, just seeing the outpouring of support from the community for a radio legend around here. It's just really neat how we're rallying together around Don and his family. And I just wanted to thank you. It was a highlight. It was the agenda highlight for me to sort of listen into that yesterday. Good job.
Well, glad to do it. Thanks for the compliments. But that all came at the initiation of the Vets Serving Vets.
Yeah.
We wanted to find a way to let folks know about how much Don has been to our organization and helped out us out with projects. Same could be said for WDA. And so we were glad to be able to go hit the road and do that, and we were able to help their GoFundMe page as well, thanks to the generosity, and also folks like Craig Still at Garlini's, mm-hmm. Smitty's, also Wenatchee Valley Super Oval, and Jeremy Anders providing some nice incentives for folks to do that. By the way, you had some fun on a recent edition of The Agenda because you are a big wrestling fan, so I know you had some fun coming in with Don
Don actually had me on. What a highlight for me. You know, I enjoy Don West, and to get a chance after a long legislative session and all we've been through with COVID to get a chance to come in here and try to hold my own with Don West about sports. You know, I grew up watching pro wrestling, so I was able to talk a little bit of pro wrestling, but he surprised me. He knows an extensive amount about track and field, which is a sport I follow. And then, you know, Seahawks, Mariners, those sort of things. But it was just, it was a highlight, and I just can't wait to get him back on the air. That'll be great for the whole community.
Indeed. We know he was listening yesterday, and so that was a lot of fun, and always a great opportunity to help someone. And so thanks to everyone who helped contribute to the effort yesterday.
And they can still help, right? It's still on kpq.com.
The GoFundMe page link, you may have to scroll down a little bit in our story, count there. Stories kind of populate on there. It's also on our Facebook page.
Awesome.
As well. So you can still definitely do that anytime. All right, we wanted to catch up on a variety of issues here just in the last day or so. I see that State Tow Truck Association, of which I think it's the Towing and Recovering Association of Washington, and you'd work closely with locally here, Randy's Auto Parts and Towing. They've been a longtime advertiser on our radio station as well, but they face a lot of safety issues. And in this case, a real pocketbook issue for tow truck operators, and we've got a number of great tow operators here in the community, and they were getting stuck with some bills, so they came to you, and touch on that bill real quick, but they singled you out for your help on that.
Yeah, and I really appreciate their sort of recognition of that. But, you know, Randy came to me during one of the pre-session discussions that I had and basically said, you know, we get called out by law enforcement to, you know, sometimes pull vehicles out of the ravine, or, you know, they've gone through the guardrail, or they're just overturned in the middle of the highway, and we're called out by law enforcement to kind of clear them out. And oftentimes the way the laws are structured in our state is, you know, if the guardrail is damaged, then the DOT gets reimbursed. And there's different ways. If there's environmental damage for gas leaks and stuff into the streams, then then, you know, there's a way to kind of recover from the people if they're negligent for, you know, causing these accidents. But sometimes just because of how the law is written, the tow truck operators sometimes have to end up absorbing the costs if the negligent drivers don't pay. And so sometimes it's very involved. They have to bring in some extra equipment. They end up, you know, obviously they're small business owners, these tow truck operators, most of them, and they have to, you know, put out a lot of money to do their job. And there's a significant portion, unfortunately, of people out there that actually don't end up paying. You know, their vehicle gets towed. You know, they're doing a great service to the community because, you know, we're all stuck in traffic and we're able to keep moving. But, you know, they need to be compensated for their work if they, you know, do a fair job. And so, you know, my bill would have put in place a mechanism that would allow the tow truck operators, if the drivers are negligent, to be compensated, you know, reasonable fees that in accordance with their established fee structure. So that bill passed the Senate last year, passed the House Transportation Committee, got all the way to the House of Representatives for a vote. But it did not get to the full floor in the House for a vote. Had it done that, I believe it would pass. Fortunately, because the bills that are introduced at the beginning of a biennium or a two-year period are good for the full two-year period. So my bill retains its status where it is. And I think if we can get it to the House floor next year for a vote, we should get it off to the governor's desk, hopefully in quick order. And I'm really honored the Towing Recovery Association of Washington recognized me as their legislator of the year for this effort. I guess they've been trying to get this sort of legislation in place for over 20 years. Some people have been dealing with this sort of absorbing the cost and eating the bills all this time. And for Randy's Towing, he mentioned it could be in the hundreds of thousands of dollars per year for his business, what he essentially has to write off for these people who are negligent and don't pay. So,
well, they're either writing,
we can get across the finish line.
Yeah, hope so. They're either writing it off or they have to include that in their fees that we all pay.
Sure, they're shifting the cost.
So either way, we got to pay it or he's got to pay it. But instead of some of that being borne by the cost of the person who caused the situation,
it only makes sense to me, you know. And it would be great to get that bill to the governor's desk next year.
Let me ask you this, we want to talk about transportation. We want to talk about wildfire situation. I know that some funding just became available, I think, as of just last week, but much of what was passed in the legislature kicks in starting next year. But before we get to that, the thought was coming to me that, you know, in the U.S. Senate, it's meant to be a more deliberative body. The senators are there elected to 6-year terms. We have the filibuster. You have 60 votes rather than the scenario is much different in probably most state senates, and certainly here. Something passes in our Washington State Senate with just a simple majority. Would you like to see in our state senate in Olympia maybe some of the hallmarks that we see in our U.S. Senate, where it takes more buy-in on a piece of legislation? Or in this case, it might be harder to pass your Randy's Towing bill, but I've never asked you that specific question, but I bet you've been asked that before.
Well, yeah, and really something like that kind of cuts both ways. On one hand, it's nice that they have this mechanism in place, the U.S. Senate, to force bipartisanship and buy-in. But on the other hand, it does sort of lead to a lot of gridlock. And that's another complaint of our federal system. The state legislature does have a little bit more deliberative body within the state Senate for much the same reasons. Our terms are not 6 years like the U.S. senators, but our terms are 4 years, which is twice as long as the House members. House members in our state run for re-election every 2 years, and
as
the
you
Senate,
well
for
knew.
Example, yeah. And I served in the House, and it's I'll tell you, in the House, it's a different sort of game because I think a lot of the members are always sort of thinking about that next election. Whereas in the Senate, if you get elected to a 4-year term, you're going over. You're able to sort of be a little more unencumbered by some of the outside political forces and try to make decisions that aren't as sort of politically motivated. That's not to say that decisions the House makes are not good decisions, but it's just a little different makeup, and it is a little more congenial in the Senate. There are half as many members, and I really noticed a big change from the House to the Senate, especially, for example, just in the caucus room where the Democrats go to caucus and the Republicans go to caucus. In the House, there are so many of us, the leadership sits up front and everybody else is seated like classroom style or theater style. So I'm kind of looking at the back of my colleagues' heads, and I was a pretty junior member of the House, so I was seated towards the back of the caucus room. It was just a different dynamic. When I went over to the Senate, there were 21 of us or more at the time, but we were all kind of lined up in a square looking at each other, discussing the issues, and it was much more of a free-flowing sort of independent-minded nature, just even within our own caucus. So totally different dynamics. And honestly, I love the Senate. I wasn't so crazy about the House process, but I love the Senate.
Well, you're about to have another one of your listening tours. Last year, you had to do it virtually. What's the situation right now? We're starting to see more of the masking mandates now come back in, requirements there. So what are your plans for your listening tour before the next session?
Well, thanks for asking. You know, last year I was actually nervous. I was like, we've had three or four different listening tours. It was something I started soon after I got elected to the Senate. I wasn't exactly sure how the community would respond to it, but it was just, I'm just super humbled and appreciative at the people's overwhelming support of it and their participation. I end up going, you know, in the earlier listening sessions all the way around the district at all these different stops along the way to meet with people in person. But last year, we had to do something. I didn't want to break my streak of annual listening tours, so we went with that all virtual approach by Zoom, and that actually worked quite well. But this year, we're going to do a hybrid approach. I haven't released the dates fully, but we're looking at mid-September, like September 14th through the 17th, and part of the dates are going to be Zoom-based so that people can, all throughout the district, can have access to me via Zoom. But we're also going to meet in person at the Confluence Technology Center, in Twisp, in Pateras, and other areas of the district. So I'm going to do this hybrid combination. I think that's appropriate for this year. That way, if people want to meet in person and they're comfortable with that, that would be awesome. If they're not entirely comfortable or access and geography is kind of a challenge, and we can do something via Zoom. So I have both options for this next year or this next listening tour. It's going to be my fifth annual listening tour, something I'm super excited about.
But you are going to have them in regional or community-based locations to have a kind of a focus on that particular area,
right,
at each stop of the way?
Yeah, the first day is going to be by Zoom, so that's sort of a free-for-all. Anybody, wherever you are, if you want to participate, please join us. Sort of the second day, which is a full day at the Confluence Technology Center, that's really a great location because it can easily accommodate people from Cashmere and Leavenworth or Eniat, as well as Douglas County and Wenatchee. So we kind of set up this opportunity the second day at the Confluence Technology Center all day for in-person appointments, primarily for Chelan and Douglas counties. And then the third and fourth days are going to be in Okanagan County with those constituents. You know, one of the things that's so important for me, and the 12th Legislative District is so large, and who knows with this redistricting, it might even grow a little bit larger geographically. But it's really important for me, and always has been, to make sure that the people, even if they live in the outskirts of our legislative district, don't in any way feel underrepresented. And I really want to make sure that people have access to their lawmakers. And that's one of the whole reasons I set up the listening tour originally. But I'll tell you, it's to get to Pateras and Twisp and all the way up to Winthrop and Mazama, it's a long haul, but I'm excited, and people have always responded really positively, so I'm glad we can do it in person up there this year.
Just real quick, two big things maybe that if you can think of that have come out of these listening tours that you've been able to go back and try to work on with some proposed or actual legislation that's come out of these.
Oh yeah, actually a handful of things. The very first year I met with the Chelan Douglas Land Trust, met with a big group of them. They told me about this project, the soil remediation project up at Saddle Rock, and how they basically, the city of Wenatchee is unable to do any earthwork really up there until the soil has been treated because of the past mining and all this stuff at Saddle Rock. And we were, Kurt Soper came over to Olympia. We actually advocated for that. I made it one of my top priorities, and we secured the funding that next session to do that work. And that work, I'm sure KPQ has reported on it. The city of Wenatchee is on point, but that work is under, on its way right now in process. And once that's completed, the land trust has a plan to sort of renovate the whole Saddle Rock trail system from the gateway trailhead, add some emergency access pathways and stuff. So it'll be really exciting. Another idea from the city of Leavenworth, they had some real issues about disposing of brush in yard waste with this apple maggot quarantine line. I ran a bill for the city of Leavenworth that was a direct result of the listening tour, much like the Saddle Rock idea. We got that done, and the governor signed that bill. A person up in Winthrop brought this idea to me. He says, you know, I really like fishing at this lake in Okanagan County for my winter fishing, but the snow is not being plowed. And I ended up having to call WDFW. There's sometimes a lot of work that comes, you know, after these individual meetings, but I have staff there. We're taking notes. I follow up with WDFW and said, yeah, that's right. We'd love to plow that. It's a great fishing location, but the road's bad and we can't plow it. So in the end, I secured some funding to renovate that half mile of road to that really popular fishing destination. And now WDFW is able to plow it, and everybody's able to do their winter fishing. This last session, for example, we secured funding for this biochar project in the Methow Valley, which is a demonstration project to dispose of woody debris and brush and yard waste to help minimize the risk of wildfire. And they're going to create this interesting material known as biochar from the brush and the underbrush. And basically, they can do this by superheating it without burning. And so that's a really exciting project in the Methow that we secured funding for just this last legislative session. And for the next 2 years, they're going to try to demonstrate this potentially for statewide benefit. You know, and that was another thing that came from the listening tour. And not to mention, just this last year, I met with the Pinnacles Prep School Group. And we had this idea, you know, they talked to me about the community center at the city of Wenatchee's community center, which is one of their facilities that they're using. And they talked about their extensive capital project needs. And we actually secured a substantial amount of funding to help the city of Wenatchee renovate its community center in partnership with Pinnacles Prep. And that was an idea that just came out of last year's listening tour. So it really does help me. And that's why I designed it in the fall to prepare me for the legislative session so I can have adequate time to get all this stuff lined up to really make a run at advocating and securing some of these things for our district. And if not specific projects, I just get general feedback about state government, and that's important for me too.
Okay. So when do you plan to release your dates and locations?
Probably towards the end of August, early September, but we're looking at the dates of September 14th through the 17th. The September 14th will likely be Zoom, and then the rest of the date, that's the 15th, I think will be the Confluence Technology Center all day, and then the rest of the days will be up in Okanagan. And these are by appointments, so we schedule them sort of separately. It's not like a drop-in. It's not like a town hall. But the individual appointment format has really worked out well, and we meet with stakeholder groups and different organizations. And so really encourage people to watch out for my website, and we'll be sending out some more information soon via email as well on the listening tour, fifth annual.
Okay, we'll be back in just a moment. State Senator Brad Hawkins, our guest on The Agenda.
You're listening to The Agenda. To reach the studios, call 663-5656 or send us your comments on the Plum Perfect text line, 663-5139.
Okay, we are talking with State Senator Brad Hawkins, and the most ever wildfire legislative funding approved in this past legislative session. Most of that doesn't kick in until 2022, but I understand some funding was released as early as this past Sunday. But we're gonna have to wait to see the full benefit of this starting until 2022, and that's going to include some new additions to the air fleet. That seems like the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember here. I remember a fire last year. It was a tiny, tiny fire up in the Eagle Creek area, I think, up near Leavenworth. And it was a tiny, tiny little fire, and they already had an airplane on it, and within within minutes. So they're putting these airplanes on them much quicker, but we need more airplanes in the fleet, and that's a part of what some of this money will go to.
Yeah, this bill is a pretty substantial bill that was passed last year. Senator or Commissioner Franz has spent a few years, she and her team, kind of working towards it. And it basically sets a goal and puts in place over $500 million total extra towards our wildfire efforts. And that's going to be over, I think, several years, maybe 6 years. So the first installment of the new additional funding is coming up for this budget cycle. And obviously, there's two aspects to the wildfire effort. You know, when I think about it, there's the firefighting or fire suppression activities and also forest health. One is sort of the immediate needs that we have, like we have right now, where we just need more assets, more air assets, so we don't have to depend on other states to loan us equipment or other countries like British Columbia, because frankly, the whole western United States, even into Canada, has been on fire, in Colorado and other states too. So we can't necessarily be so certain that the federal government is going to always be there to support us, because the resources just might not be there. And then also, you know, some of the seasonal firefighters are becoming year-round firefighters because, frankly, it's no longer a fire season anymore. It's becoming a fire year.
Well, California seems to need people in what we consider almost our winter, and they're having fires down there.
Yeah, and the fires in Washington, they're starting much earlier, but going much later. Last year, we had the fires in September, for example, that broke out. And some of the fires don't really get put out until the snow falls. And so it's very much becoming a year-round effort. So that's on the firefighting side. We have to get to a point in our state where we can, like you mentioned, put out the fires soon after they start rather than just sort of managing them once they get burning. And so that's kind of all on the firefighting side. And that takes a lot of resources, a lot of investment of state dollars. But then also the forest health, the long-term, like sort of strategic thinning and clearing out the underbrush and adding maybe a prescribed fire to the landscape after that's all done to sort of, and then actually be able to harvest some of those smaller diameter trees, utilize the natural resources, put people to work, stimulate the economy, and protect our forests and reduce our risk of catastrophic wildfire over time. Basically, to do the work that is going to take place hopefully over the next decade or so, that's what the federal government hasn't been doing for many years. We basically neglected our national forests. Some of our state-owned forest lands are really thick with trees. So we have a lot of work to do. And I really want to make sure the state's investing in the forest health work, which is the long-term strategic effort to put people at work, stimulate the economy, and also get to the point where we're having to spend less and less on firefighting and hopefully more and more on the front end wildfire. So that particular bill from last legislative session aims to do significantly more of both over the next several years. But getting the air assets, getting the staff in place is going to be a big help as well.
So is our work sufficient enough on state forest lands, but what about federal forest lands to tackle this forest management? You use the term forest health, but what about forest management? You can't just, we hear some politicians talk about wanting to lay it all at the foot of climate change, but you've got to make sure that forest is cleared out and not a tinderbox ready to go.
Absolutely.
Because of dead timber, and there's dead timber in the federal forest as well.
Absolutely, and wildfire knows no boundaries. And so there's only so much that the state can do. We really need a good federal partner. And North Central Washington, to your point, Dave, has a tremendous amount of U.S. Forest Service land. And so we really need the U.S. Forest Service to do its job. We really need the U.S. Congress to stop the fire borrowing, which is taking the money from their forest management budget to fund their wildfire efforts. We need both. That's what we're doing at the state level. But you're right. I mean, these forests, this landscape, whether it's, you know, the state lands or the federal lands, I mean, basically we need the lands cleared as best we can and properly treated. And basically the current wildfire situation is you have a lot of underbrush And then you have these small diameter trees packed into the forest landscape in between the larger diameter trees. And the natural forest was never really intended to be that way. And a natural forest, a healthy forest, can sort of absorb a naturally occurring wildfire. But what's happening now is you got so much underbrush that catches on fire, and then the smaller diameter trees that are packed in there, and then the larger trees get burning, and then it all gets burning. So we really need to do our best to have a strategic effort to clear these lands as best we can, leaving the larger diameter trees and leaving a healthy forest that isn't going to burn. And when it doesn't burn, then we don't have all those carbon emissions from the wildfires that we're having, and we don't put wildland firefighters at risk. We don't jeopardize the important tourism season that we have here, and people can be outside and be healthy and not deal with all the smoke, which is unfortunately, you know, our situation now. But after COVID, you know, we don't want to be cooped inside. So there's a lot of work that still needs to be done, and we need all hands on deck, so to speak, state and federal and local, to help do the job.
So how are we paying for all of this? Now, our state revenues, despite COVID, were actually pretty flush.
Mm-hmm.
Certain sectors of our economy really took it, but we also did additional spending elsewhere.
Right.
So how are we paying for all this extra wildfire management?
Well, that was kind of the initial pushback on the original bills from a couple of years ago, is they did propose an additional fee to fund the enhanced wildfire efforts, both the firefighting as well as the forest health efforts. And some of us were saying, well, wildfire work is really important. It needs to be as much of a priority as for our state as mental health, as homelessness, and even education funding, some of these other state priorities. I mean, obviously, that's what we need. Just look back at the last 6 or 10 years in our state, the Carlton Complex fire, the Okanagan Complex fire. I mean, every year in Clee Ellum and otherwise, you know, we're starting to see these. So my push is to make wildfire funding a higher priority in state government, and to have those discussions right upside, you know, mental health and homelessness and some of these other equally important state priorities. This year, fortunately, the revenues were much better than expected as we kind of went into the session with COVID and everything. We got a lot of extra federal stimulus dollars. The state budget, which I didn't vote for, also proposed, as you mentioned, you know, some extra revenue enhancements like the capital gains income tax, which is now being challenged in court, as well as some other taxes. So basically, this major piece of wildfire legislation from last session is sort of funded in the budget as proposed with its extra revenue. But I really want wildfire to be funded with the first dollar rather than the last dime of the state budgeting. And I don't want anyone to try to explain why we somehow need to justify some extra tax at a time when we have extra revenues. We should be putting those revenues towards our wildfire needs.
We're talking with State Senator Brad Hawkins. Before we go to a break, local law enforcement is going to be hosting a series of community meetings to focus and basically alert the community, I think is maybe a word that has been used to describe how new police reforms have been passed this past legislative session that may be some eye-opening circumstances that the community may not have expected. We had Police Chief Steve Crown from Wenatchee. We had Sheriff Brian Burnett on earlier this year, and we were kind of focusing on some of those elements, which were bans on police choke holds, that sort of technique. Mm-hmm. But there are other changes that are now being implemented. One kind of even came into play, I think, with a recent case of issue of a mental health patient that had been released, stole a rafting mm-hmm. bus
mm-hmm.
and fled police, and they called off the pursuit of that, and that person went on to commit some more devastation to an ex-wife's house, as that story ultimately developed into. But police are going to be explaining here how mm-hmm. they're not going to be able to do things that they've done in the past that they fear the community is going to basically be very startled to know about.
Right.
So let's talk about the police reforms that were passed in the legislature. I don't believe you voted for those, and so I wanted to have you maybe shed a little bit of light on that as well. These meetings will be taking place here soon in our community.
Yes, and these are important meetings. You know, my full support goes out to our local law enforcement. And during the legislative session, when some of these police reform bills were being proposed and being debated and considered upon, I know I've had extensive discussions with the same officials that you were talking about, as well as Douglas County and other city of East Wenatchee and others. So we have had a lot of good discussions. I didn't vote for any of those bills. Not that, you know, I disagree with kind of the spirit of some of those things, but there were really sweeping reforms. There were a lot of details, and I believe there will be significant unintended consequences with the legislation. So the three bills that passed, one was House Bill 1054, dealing with police tactics and equipment. That dealt with the chokeholds, the neck restraints. Also, you know, there was an effort to try to prohibit use of canine dogs as well, although that sort of rolled into sort of this task force. That bill passed, and I voted against it. Another bill was dealing with police use of force, and it would require a bunch of extra trainings and de-escalation tactics and really get the attorney general involved. And it would also restrict the ways that police could potentially use tear gas during riots and eliminating some of the tools. One of the other bills also limited the amount of or types of equipment, some of the Army-style SWAT equipment that we actually have invested a lot in for City of Wenatchee, as we heard from the police chief here on that bill. And we were able to exempt some of the equipment for our tactical SWAT teams. But some of the other entities that have invested a significant amount in their equipment, the equipment that is intended to keep our law enforcement officers safe, they're saying, you know, they don't want that being used anymore. And then there's also a bunch of new oversight of police efforts and ways to sort of decertify police, you know, that are, you know, it's people's livelihoods, how they feed their families. And I guess when it comes down to it, Dave, you know, I totally support having a fair justice system and responsible law enforcement officers, but we got to be really careful about the things that are some of these things that have been proposed and are now being implemented that undercut our law enforcement officers. These men and women, very courageous, put on a Kevlar vest every day to do their jobs. It's a very, very dangerous job. And some of these pieces of legislation are now new bills because the governor signed them and now they have now gone effective, are actually going to potentially force these courageous law enforcement officers to second and third guess themselves when they're out there trying to keep themselves safe, trying to keep the others safe, and as well as the community. So I didn't support those bills. I think they went way too far, and I wouldn't be surprised in future sessions if there are adjustments and hopefully improvements and fine tuning to make some of those laws better. But there are going to be some unintended consequences, and one of which I believe over the long term potentially could really discourage young men and women from pursuing law enforcement as a career. Because if you have the options now that I can be a teacher, I can go into law enforcement, or I can go into private business, and I think potentially people are going to choose some other options. And the irony of it all, Dave, is that some of these laws that are intended to keep us safer are actually could have the potential of making us less safe. And that's a big concern of mine. So I'm thankful that Sheriff Burnett and others are having these community conversations, because people need to know what the legislature just approved and what the potential adverse effects could be.
Well, it also has EMS services concerned as well, because they rely on law enforcement who may otherwise now be leaving scenes, and EMS are not going to be able to do their job in certain situations as well. So it's becoming a very complicated situation as a result of these new rules. And folks will be hearing more as a result of these community meetings as we hear from law enforcement about how they say their hands are going to be tied or restricted, and their ability to respond, and the kinds of things that they'll just have to be forced to back away from in certain situations.
So there could be ripple effects, could be unintended consequences. Hopefully there'll be some improvements, and hopefully we could all acknowledge them. Maybe some of these additional trainings could be helpful. But I just think our community, fortunately, our community is very supportive of our local law enforcement. And this is, some listeners might be thinking, well, what can I do? Well, one of the things you can do is when you see a law enforcement officer, thank them. You know, thank them for the job that they do. And, you know, it's a dangerous job. The crime rates are actually increasing. I don't know necessarily in Wenatchee, but, you know, statewide, the burglary rates are up. The human trafficking is up. Vehicular issues and other prowls. I mean, a lot of these crime statistics are up. So these folks are hopefully going to be able to somehow overcome all this and continue to keep us safe.
We'll take a break here and come back, and again, let's get an assessment on where next to complete some of our transportation projects that we're trying to. We've gotten a little bit of a piece of the puzzle, some important pieces, and probably the biggest share of funding that anyone got here recently, but there's more work to be done, and so we'll wrap up the agenda today, the full hour with State Senator Brad Hawkins, after this.
KPQ. Welcome back to The Agenda on News Radio 560 KPQ with Dave Bernstein.
All righty, we wanted to talk with Wenatchee about some Wenatchee transportation projects. And also, before we let him go, State Senator Brad Hawkins, whether or not we might see a fall special session, we'll save that right for the end. But we did get a nice chunk of funding for our Apple Capital project, trying to improve transportation here in the north end of town, and some other corridor projects. We got the largest funding of anyone this latest go around, but there's more to go. So kind of what's the next step as you watch what the state can go after? I know the entities are going after some federal funding as well. So what's next from here as we try to piece this all together?
Yeah, and hopefully we will. And a big congratulations to Mayor Frank Kuntz, City of Wenatchee, and other local partners for securing the $92 million in the federal infra grant recently. They've been working on that for several years. It's basically the partners in Chelan and Douglas County Transportation Council, which is comprised of county commissioners, the DOT, and mayors, and Link Transit. Anyway, they plan out this whole collection of projects, and it was over $200 million and kind of dubbed it the Apple Capital Loop, but it's really a loop of various different projects in the multi-million dollars, one of which includes one of the major projects in that collection is the second bridge that's proposed across the Wenatchee River, known as Confluence Parkway. And the $92 million of federal funding will help significantly for that. It was great, but it doesn't get that particular Confluence Parkway bridge done. And so approximately every 6 to 8 years, maybe 10 years, the legislature passes a major transportation investment initiative. But the tough part is it has an offsetting sort of fees and gas taxes and other things. But the Apple Capital Loop project and the Confluence Parkway is still identified to complete that as kind of the Chelan and Douglas County's top priorities. As a 12th District Senator, there are priorities outside of Chelan and Douglas County still within the 12th District, like bridges across the in the Methow Valley that need to be replaced too. But what I will try to do is look at their list of priorities, which the remaining priorities in our area are basically that Confluence Parkway project, some additional investments in the North Wenatchee Avenue area, and a new interchange just on the Douglas County side of the Odabashian Bridge, much like, you know, maybe a similar type of thing. You see this interchange and spreading of streets like at the George Seller Bridge, we need something on the Douglas County side. That's known as the Wenatchee Landing Interchange. I think it's about a $28 million proposal. And there are some other needs as well. I think we really need to look at maybe widening SR 28 between East Wenatchee and Quincy, or East Wenatchee, maybe someday go four lanes all the way out to I-90. I know we have issues on Highway 97 and Highway 97A. I'd like to see more passing lanes, but I don't think the Chelan-Douglas Transportation Council has identified those yet. So I'll be working off their priorities and trying to secure those in the next transportation investment package. They tried to get it done last legislative session, but didn't quite get there.
So with $92 million that came through the infra grant, does that help leverage the state to do anything, or does the state look as this just a series of a la carte projects?
Separate sources of funding, but I think it is very important to try to complete this Apple Capital Loop collection of projects. And the $92 million actually, I think, will help create capacity for additional projects. And one of the things that I recently did was I sent a request to the Chelan-Douglas Transportation Council to basically say, hey, this legislation was passed out of the Transportation Committee in the Senate just a couple months ago. It included $225 million for these Apple Capital Loop projects. We just got $92 million from the federal government. What additional projects are on your list, right? Because we need to try to maximize the allocation for the 12th district. And so that's where the SR 28 has now come in. But to the extent that there are additional priorities beyond those, hopefully we can secure the funding for those. But let's not stop there, because I know other districts in the state are getting, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars for their district, for their mega projects. So maybe we need to, you know, quote unquote, have a mega project over here so we can get our fair share when some of those proposals are passed in the state. And we only have like once every 8 or so years, these major packages pass at the state level. And so we should, you know, be ready to try to maximize our advocacy to get that.
So we seem to be doing just fine in terms of state revenue. If there were to be a legislative fall, a special session, I would hope that would be to curtail the governor's executive powers. But since the Democrats control the House, the Senate, and, of course, the governor is a Democrat, I don't suppose that could be the focus or purpose for a special session.
Not likely.
Do you have any reasons to see a special session in the fall?
Well, it's not likely for the emergency powers reform, although the Republicans have tried to pass that. As you mentioned, I actually co-sponsored a bill that essentially would say the governor could issue one proclamation for 30 or 45 days, but if he wanted to renew it, he'd have to get the support of the full legislature. But, of course, Governor Inslee would have to sign that into law, so I think that's complicated. But for this fall, I think the discussion was the Democratic members were really pleased with all their priorities, capital gains tax and climate cap and trade and some of these other priorities they were able to get done. But they did not pass the transportation investment package. And that is potentially the justification for a special session. It might be just focused primarily on transportation. And the way that works is there's a whole collection of projects that are identified, new projects, but there's also a corresponding list of new revenues that offset those, and that's where the big discussions come in.
Well, your bill, you say, to simply allow the governor to renew his executive order, you know, on some sort of 30 or 60-day basis, they'd have the votes to do that. And then there would be the appearances of, see, we're letting the full legislature vote on that. We've got like a minute to have you respond to that. Why couldn't that gain some traction? There would be the votes to push that through and renew it each 30 or 60 days.
Yeah. So here's the challenge with that, I think, is like we've asked the same question too, but the Democratic members are in charge of both the House and the Senate. They have the by far the expanded majorities. So I think the votes are there for emergency powers reform, reasonable emergency powers reform, because I don't think our state law has ever intended a years-long sort of emergency that we're sort of in now. But basically, Governor Inslee would need to sign that bill into law. There's no way around it. And I don't know the private discussions he's had. Perhaps he's signaled, hey, I'm going to veto this. You know, this is not going to make it out. And some of the Democratic members don't want to, in a sense, embarrass the governor by sending this to his desk and going against him if he doesn't want to sign it. To me, it's not really about our governor. It's about all his successors. It's about having checks and balances in our state government. You know, and if it doesn't work legislatively, Dave, I guess there's always the option of a citizen initiative for emergency powers reform. That's not something the legislature is involved in, but it is a question I continue to hear a lot about from constituents, and I want listeners to know it's something I've co-sponsored and tried to pass.
All right. Well, thanks for your time. We are out of time, and that's State Senator Brad Hawkins joining us on the agenda today, and that'll wrap it up for us because it's 2:00. We'll see you next time around.
Thanks for having me, Dave.